Welcome to the University of Michigan Press podcast. Today we're talking to Nancy Goldstein, author of Jackie Orms, the first African-American woman cartoonist, published by the University of Michigan Press. Nancy Goldstein first became fascinated with the story of Jackie Orms while doing research on the Patti Jo doll. She has published a number of articles on the history of dolls in the classical world in the United States. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Joe.
Can you talk a bit about why and how you came to write this book? You have a long-standing interest in dolls, is that right?
Well, that's right. I came to write this book through my interest in dolls. I'm a doll collector, and I've written about doll history. And, you know, I want to say the word dolls, because sometimes people hear me say dogs. These are dolls, playthings in the image of human beings, usually made for little girls. But there were a couple of doll history books that have information about the Patti Jo doll by cartoonist Jackie Orms. And they told about how she transformed her cartoon character, Patti Jo, into a doll. And, well, this is a beautiful upscale doll, and it's in an era when most black dolls were rag mammies and topsy types. So I was curious to learn more about the woman who created this extraordinary doll.
Oh, okay. So what caught your eye then to lead you to launch a full-scale investigation and then a book about Jackie Orms?
Well, first I was looking for the doll, and I'd heard that Jackie Orms actually promoted her doll in her cartoons in this newspaper. So what were those cartoons? I was wondering, and so I went to the university library and I pulled a reel of microfilm off the shelf. It was the Pittsburgh Courier of 1947. And the Courier at that time was the biggest circulating African-American newspaper. It had 14 editions coast to coast.
Wow.
Yeah, they claimed to have over 1 million readers.
That's amazing.
And it was only a weekly. It came out on Saturday. And so as I cranked through this microfilm, I was really thrilled by what I saw. It was a piece of American history that would suddenly come to life with these headlines that seemed so urgent and immediate. And for me, here was this news and commentary from the perspective of the black community. Well, of course, these were the days before the civil rights movement. And there were page after page of stories and photos, wonderful photos, of achievement, of struggle, celebration, and plenty of controversy, and all from an African-American point of view. And then, as you go through the pages, you come on the funnies.
Yeah.
Funny papers. And all of the characters were African-American. And it wasn't a minstrel show either, like we would have seen in the mainstream papers of the time. Not the stereotypes and not the caricatures. These cartoon people had real lives and real issues, and they dealt with them on their own terms. So here was Jackie Orms' cartoon. I found it. Patti Jo and Ginger. It stood right out on the page. Very clear, crisp, black outline drawings of this beautiful woman, Ginger, dressed in high fashion, and her little sister, who always had something smart to say. And they were so fun to look at, so charming. Patti Jo does all the talking, and Ginger reacts to her words. She has this wide-eyed surprise at whatever Patti Jo is saying. But at that time, I was starting by looking for the Patti Jo doll. And, of course, I found those doll images. Here was the character Patti Jo holding this doll. Or here was Patti Jo just, you know, telling readers, save your money for a doll. Or she might have in her hand a coupon to order the doll, and the coupon would actually have Jackie Orms' own home address.
That's
in
great.
Chicago, where she lived. Yeah, and today we would look at this as product placement. You know, audacious,
yes,
really.
Yes, very.
But then, as I kept going through the microfilm, the cartoons themselves began to capture my interest. You know, in the cartoons, Orms is satirizing news that's in the headlines. For instance, I'm looking at a cartoon right now. It's Patti Jo and Ginger. They're on a city street, and they're standing in front of a flower cart. A vendor is selling beautiful long-stem red roses. And Patti Jo says, well, you're stocked pretty heavy, Leo. Ain't you scared they'll be viewed with alarm? by that new committee and tagged un-American beauties. Yeah. So, you know, she is making a comment about the HUAC.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
yeah.
the Red Scare and the, you know, Red American Beauty Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wondered, who is this person? Who is this outspoken Jackie Orms, and why has nobody written about her? And, of course, these amazing cartoons. So it was her, looking at her original cartoons on those pages of the newspaper with the news of the time all around the cartoons, and that opened the door to this larger project. Jackie Orms died in 1985 at the age of 74, and I knew that many of her contemporaries were gone, or they soon would be, so it seemed really important to get what information I could as soon as possible.
Okay. So, apart from being the only black cartoonist of her time, which is really a huge accomplishment in itself, what else do you see as particularly unique about Jackie Orms as a person and a cartoonist? How does she fit into the canon of American cartoonists and social commentators?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, there were a number of male cartoonists in the black press.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yes, she was the first woman, and she's the only black woman cartoonist. And, you know, her life is extraordinary. She stepped out of a comfortable, traditional, middle-class place in rather high society in Southside Chicago, and she entered a man's world, and the profession of newspaper cartooning. This was something women just didn't do. Her social and political commentary was so audacious it could be compared to the editorial cartoons at the time of Herb Block and Bill Malden.
Wow.
In the mainstream papers, and also a very well-known black cartoonist, Oliver Harrington, in the black press. And like them, she was a presence on the national scene, and she used her soapbox, which was the newspaper, to talk about important issues like foreign policy, the arms race, jobs, housing, education. But when you look at the entire work, political comics were just part of that work. There was also her humorous satire about just everyday situations and human foibles.
Mm-hmm.
But her drawings are really unique and remarkable, and perhaps especially since she was a self-taught cartoonist. Her women are drawn with really great sensitivity, and the lines of their faces and their bodies and clothes are beautifully supple and very believable. And, you know, when you see her work on the page next
yes.
to other cartoonists, you can tell she was a natural draftsperson.
Yeah.
Yeah, and compared to hers, some of the others, you know, sometimes they look stiff and static.
Yeah.
But outside of cartooning, Jackie Orms was a fashion leader in Southside Chicago, and she had a business training models. And she thrived on high fashion, and her comics reflect her love of fashion. For instance, she might talk about having her characters dress in Christian Dior's new look. And then she would move, it's really funny to watch from comic to comic, their hemlines would go up
yes.
or down, depending on the fashion dictates of the time. And her character's hair was always in style. And especially I love to see. They wore very fashionable shoes. And she would have Ginger, for instance, stepping right out of the cartoon over the border, over the edge of the cartoon, to draw attention to these shoes. I mean, almost, if you were a reader holding the paper, it would be like she's stepping right into your lap.
Right.
And so you'd have to see these great high heels, or these cute flats, or string sandals. And, of course, your eye would begin to gaze up to Ginger's beautiful legs. Well, she had another character, Torchy, in Torchy Tugs. And she drew paper dolls to go with this comic strip, and they had clothes like mink-trimmed evening gowns and smart day suits, and the suits would have matching hats and gloves, and then there would be lots of casual wear. And then in her cartoons, Orms would turn the humor back on herself, really, and make fun of fashion about the style dictators, like Christian Dior, and how they kept changing their minds, and how people really, like her, followed all those fads. Well, yeah, along with her high high status in society. She did a lot of volunteer work, and she worked for Progress in Southside Chicago by producing fashion shows and other entertainments, and she brought in top entertainers to star in these fundraisers for, like, the Urban League and the NAACP and the Chicago Negro Chamber of Commerce. And then for almost two decades, when the childhood disease of polio was rampant, she supported the March of Dimes in her cartoons, and she also organized her neighborhood for the door-to-door campaign. And looking through her archives, you'll see there are letters of thanks from politicians, from congressional representatives for her work as precinct captain, and letters from schools for her appearances at career days.
Well, so much more than just a cartoonist.
Oh, she was very involved in her community, and then, you know, she had a lovely marriage, and the way they lived was fascinating. She was in the center of things. Her husband, Earl Orms, at one time managed the upscale Sutherland Hotel, and they lived at the Sutherland. This was a time when blacks couldn't get a room at a hotel in the Loop, so here was a high-quality South Side accommodation for travelers, like entertainers and politicians and others, and Jackie and Earl socialized with celebrities and persons of really some fame, and she fit right in. She made contacts with band leader Duke Ellington and Billy Eckstein and singer Sarah Vaughan, and she would later ask some of these friends and acquaintances to perform in these fundraising fashion shows.
Wow, really a fascinating story, not only just of her as a cartoonist, but of the amazing life that she lived. As far as cartoons go, they today seem to have come of age. Was Jackie Orms, in your opinion, ahead of her time? And if so, how was she?
Oh, yeah, she was especially ahead of her time in bringing these serious issues of racism and the environment into some of her comic themes. Kind of at the end of her career, in 1954, very prominently, her character Torchy in Heartbeats. Torchy battled the owner of a factory that was polluting a little southern town and making people sick. And this was, you know, it was about the time that cartoonist Walt Kelly had Pogo walking through the filthy, polluted Okefenokee Swamp. And, you know, his famous saying, we have met the enemy and he is us. Well, Orms was doing that also, but she went further to show that the polluter in her comic, that factory owner, was also a racial bigot.
Was that kind of going out on a limb, do you think, at the time?
I think for her community, they would have been very familiar with this image of industrialist, of a factory owner, just really ignoring the needs of the community. So for her particular audience, it was probably something they could look at and say, ah, yes, we get this. We're very familiar with this. Well, and then she kind of resolves this in the comic by having Torchy and her doctor boyfriend, they bring the factory owner around, and the story ends with this same industrialist changing his ways. And in the comic, there's this image that you see of them reconciling. There's a close-up, and this is in color. This is a color strip. And there's the factory owner and the doctor are shaking hands, and you see a white and a black hand in this handshake.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, again, your question about forward-looking, today, this struggle to clean up our poorer neighborhoods, we call it environmental justice. And I'm not sure any cartoonist even yet has really addressed this, but maybe Aaron Magruder in Boondocks. Magruder makes racially relevant protest comics also.
What do Orms' cartoons say about the times in which they were written?
Well, Jackie Orms was a great observer of the world around her. When you look at her work, it's like time travel, but it's through cartoons. For instance, there's one Patty Joe and Ginger cartoon where Patty Joe, of course, is complaining about President Truman's foreign policy. And then another has children in a rundown tenement where she's protesting this inferior housing. And then there's one, maybe three or four, actually, that make fun of abstract art.
Yeah.
And cartoon after cartoon railing on about the HUAC, and then you see Senator Joseph McCarthy, and she actually puts him on television with those, you know, much reviled hearings that we think of now. And really it's striking that some of these are issues that are still with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has this parrot that keeps showing up, so she talks about free speech with this device as through
mm-hmm.
the parrot.
Yeah.
And then she'll talk about the arms buildup and taxes. And, of course, she's always talking about fashions and fads. But occasionally, too, she slips in a cameo appearance of a celebrity,
mm-hmm.
like her late 1930s Torchy series takes Torchy from a Mississippi farm to Harlem, where she dances in the Cotton Club.
Okay.
And she has cartoon images of entertainers, Bill Bojangles Robinson, and she has Cab Calloway, and then she kind of ends it with a bang with Josephine Baker. But really, most of her work was just humorous observation of human foibles, funny takes on everyday life. Her beautiful characters are always dressed in contemporary clothing. They're very carefully drawn. They have very detailed surroundings, like their homes or city streets or department stores, or she'll have characters playing in a park or in a movie house. So she's showing, really reporting on how people dressed,
mm-hmm.
how they furnished their homes, and some of the really fun ones are how they traveled. She'll have her characters in trains, in cars. And amazing, in 1937, she has Torchy getting on an airplane. So they're so much fun to look at, but really they're a visual commentary on modern life and a window into that era.
Okay.
Well, you know, another thing that I'm sure you've noticed, Orms was fascinated with the image of the pinup girl. These were so popular at the time. And her characters, Ginger and Torchy, they're very curvaceous and they're beautifully dressed, or sometimes they're not very much dressed. But for all of that, they appear very modest and really acceptable. And you have to think that these pinup images must have helped sell newspapers.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. You know, all the popular print media was doing pinups at this time. You know, it was like post-war America. They'd become popular during that time of war, where they were sent out and used as morale boosters.
Mm-hmm.
And people who knew her, who I interviewed, say that she actually looked and dressed like many of her characters, and we have to believe that she was using herself as a model many times.
Interesting. Nancy, can describe the world of women cartoonists, if you can, at
mm-hmm.
the time of Orms' prominence. She was the only black woman cartoonist in the heyday of newspaper comics in the mid-20th century, but what sort of obstacles would a woman cartoonist encounter in her work to become recognized?
Right. Well, in one interview in 1947, she did comment, she said, women cartoonists are not so rare as you think.
Huh.
Yeah, so she obviously was thinking of others like Gladys Parker, who drew Flapper Fanny, and later Parker drew Mopsy. And in fact, Orms' artwork is quite reminiscent of Parker's. They both use these very clean, crisp lines, and they do have these pin-up figures. But it was tough for women to crack into this man's profession of newspaper cartooning, and some people say even today, it's especially hard for women cartoonists. But in that comment about not so rare as you think, she must have been thinking about other women cartoonists who came before, like Nell Brinkley and Grace Drayton and Ethel Hayes and Hilda Terry. And, you know, really importantly for these women cartoonists, they had female characters starring in their comics. And one strategy, they say, to get past that gender bias back then was using an ungendered name. And probably the most famous woman cartoonist for us today like this was Dale Messick.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The woman who drew Brenda Starr Reporter. And then there was also Tarp Mills, who drew Miss Fury. And maybe even for some readers, Jackie might have been understood as a man's name like Jackie Robinson. But, of course, I had to really think about why would there have been this opposition, and I just am guessing that some obstacles may have been men editors who may have thought that readers were mostly men who didn't want to read about a female central character. Women were supposed to depend on men, and they could be sidekicks, like Lois Lane and Superman. Well, also, maybe they thought that there would be too much romance and not enough action if a woman did a story. But then you have to look and say, well, here's Brenda Starr, reporter, and Miss Fury, very strong women, and prove them wrong on those counts. And yes, there was opposition, but there must have been some support, too, because Brenda Starr ran for over 30 years. Well, it's interesting that with Jackie Orms in 1978, some 20 years after cartooning ended for her, she wrote a little piece about herself. This was for a program for a club she was in, and she said it was strictly a man's world in professional cartooning.
So was Orms influenced by any other cartoonists, and if so, who were they?
Well, she didn't leave any statements behind about who influenced her, but she did say that as a youngster, she taught herself to draw by copying comics out of the newspaper. And one of the comics she would have seen, and it looks a lot like her early work, is George McManus's story of Jiggs and Maggie in Bringing Up Father. And, you know, when you look at her early Torchy Brown in Dixie to Harlem, it has similar delicate ink pen outlines and interiors of homes and expressive faces, something like Bringing Up Father.
Okay.
And the story kind of follows along, too, very similar, both, you know, Depression-era stories. Here's Jiggs in Bringing Up Father and Torchy in Dixie to Harlem, both in these rags-to-riches stories.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they each one come from very humble beginnings, and then they climb above their station, and they get into lots of messes and funny situations. And well, okay, then I mentioned before Gladys Parker, who is similar in artistic style, and then you'd have to compare Dale Messick's Brenda Starr Reporter, another adventurous, independent woman who dresses beautifully and has paper doll panels with the strip, something like Orms' later Torchy and Heartbeats.
So then in a similar vein, did Jackie Orms influence other cartoonists of her day or even later?
Well, let's see, about 30 years after Orms, Barbara Brandon Croft had a comic strip titled Where I'm Coming From, and that was in the Universal Press Syndicate. And she's written and said that Jackie was the pioneer who inspired her work. And then there's now a group called the Orms Society, and these are African-American women cartoonists and illustrators, and they've taken the legacy of Jackie Orms as their inspiration.
Okay.
And then more on the academic level, a few scholars and cartoon historians have found her work and they've written about it. So her influence is felt, but it's really very late in coming. So as for immediate successors, not really. Pittsburgh Courier, where her work mostly appeared, it was a weekly African-American paper, and it was small in comparison to these daily mainstream papers. So her work was really not as widely appreciated at the time as she deserved.
Patty Jo, the cartoon character, seems to have a liberal view, and despite the fact that you point out that very little, if any, information was found that might reveal Orms' thoughts or chronicle her life, do you know anything about her politics? Was she involved in any political or social movements in her day?
Well, that was one of the reasons I kept cranking through that microfilm. Her political statements are right there in those Patty Jo and Ginger cartoons. And those are her best statements. For instance, here's a cartoon with Patty Jo and Ginger. They're at a Halloween party, and they're dressed as witches. And this is like 1948. And Patty Jo says, "It's a good thing we're dressed as witches. In Hollywood, the scouts are simply hunting them these days." And then there's another here that complains about the FBI following people who speak out. And then there's others, you know, as you go on through the work, of politicians hunting the communists in government. And well, kind of at the end of her cartooning era in the 1950s, during the Montgomery, Alabama bus strike, Patty Jo in a cartoon sends her roller skates to help people get around. So these were the days, you know, when the FBI director J. Edgar Hoover was obsessed with hunting communists. And he thought that communists were hiding in the government, in the military, in Hollywood, and certainly in the black community. And he thought that some of these people were engaged in what he would call treasonous activity. So naturally, as a biographer, I wondered if she might have an FBI file. And sure enough, she did. They kept a file on her for about 10 years. And it's interesting because it's not because of her cartoons, but really on account of her friendships and her attendance at some events where communists or suspected communists were present. And when you read it and you see the informant's statements and the assumptions made by the FBI agents, there's a lot of conflicting information. So you have to be skeptical about some of it. It's clear Orms was never a member of the Communist Party, but for sure, she sympathized with some of their goals, like fairer treatment in housing and education and jobs. And when the FBI interviewed her in her home, it's really very impressive to read between the lines and see that her words in this transcript reveal how strong she was. I mean, she's only like 5 foot tall and 110 pounds, and she just stood her ground with these interviewing agents. And on the other hand, she also stood up to the CP when they tried to recruit her, and she refused to become a member. So, okay, other political comments in her cartoons, especially in Patty Jo and Ginger, are when Patty Jo is telling the readers to get out and vote. And then there's one with Patty Jo lobbying for a civil rights plank at a presidential nominating convention. Something, you know, very much with us today with planning to elect our next president. There are other cartoons make statements about labor solidarity. And then during the Korean War days, her New Year's greeting would always be for peace. And then in her souvenirs that I located going through letters and papers, they show how she supported and helped organize peace movements right up through the Vietnam War.
Okay. So in addition to being a cartoonist and everything else, Orms also created dolls. Can you tell us a bit about the Patty Jo doll that she created?
Oh, yes. And, Chris, this is what led me originally to discover Jackie Orms through this Patty Jo doll, just an extraordinary creation. She's an elegant little black girl doll with lots and lots of beautiful clothes. And this was made at a time when most black dolls were either babies or they were stereotypes or caricatures. The dolls were advertised as pickaninnies or mammies. And this doll stands 16 inches high and is made of hard plastic. The original Patty Jo doll, Jackie Orms doll, was manufactured by the Terry Lee Company of Lincoln, Nebraska for only 2 years, from 1947 to 49. And we don't really know why the production ended. But today a company called Terry Lee Associates is producing a likeness of this doll. It's a historic doll. And this doll that they're making presently is for Kmart, and it is called Patty Jo.
Okay. Do you know why the Patty Jo doll was created in the first place? Did Orms see a gap that needed to be filled?
Well, you can imagine how it was in those years just after the war ended. Here was America going through the greatest economic expansion in history. And there were lots of new materials and products on the market. And mothers and fathers all wanted to buy their children those toys and playthings that they'd been missing for so many years, and dolls were at the top of the list for little girls. But for the African-American parents, the only dolls of quality were white dolls. The brown dolls were Topsies and Mammies, and, you know, parents, I'm sure they didn't miss the point that the message was once again that of second-class citizenship. Jackie Orms was very much aware of this discrepancy, and when her Patty Jo doll came out, she's quoted in some advertising as saying, "No more raggedy Sambos, just kids." You know, she was making a real effort to instill pride in African-American children. But also, Orms was a smart businesswoman, and she knew this was an untapped market, and she would have loved to have had a bestseller. But again, she was ahead of her time, and it's interesting to look at some other events that were going on. Just a few years later, the NAACP, well then its attorney, Thurgood Marshall, he used dolls to argue in the Brown versus Board of Education case at the Supreme Court. And his argument included what was a so-called doll test. And in the test, psychologists had asked black children to choose between the black or the white dolls. And the children, black children, overwhelmingly chose white dolls. And when they were asked about this, they said the white dolls were, in their words, nicer and prettier. Well, this was very dramatic to present to the Supreme Court, and it helped convince those justices to order the integration of public schools in America.
I had no idea.
Yeah, just dolls. And after that case, the dolls helped prove, and it was believed, that there was an epidemic of low self-esteem among black children, and that they needed more positive self-images, including those in dolls. And Jackie Orms had tried to redress this same inequality many years before. You know, you'd really want to understand, too, some of her deeper feelings, perhaps, about her Patty Jo character and her Patty Jo doll. Some people actually feel that the cartoon character and the doll were modeled after Jackie and Earl's little daughter, who died at age 3. But it just really wasn't in Jackie's nature to be sad, and she never did really talk about her grief. And standing back and looking at the whole picture, you can see that creating Patty Jo turned out to be a joyful relationship for her. Here in the cartoon and the doll was a little girl right at her fingertips, and it was a child who was always in the pink of health. And Jackie and Earl never did have more children, but they did have a happy and long 45-year marriage.
Okay, so given everything that you've said so far, what would you think then is Jackie Orms' greatest legacy?
Oh, well, you'd have to say that her greatest legacy is the prideful images of African-American experience. When you think that, week after week, she presented to over a million readers from coast to coast images of black people traveling, graduating from schools, taking music lessons, attending art galleries, shopping in fine stores, characters who were well-informed and speaking out at political conventions and challenging racist attitudes and more. So from our perspective today, we really have to admire Orms's confidence in what African Americans were achieving and could achieve in the future. And for all of us, by extension, we can all benefit from her example of courage and her hard work and her life of some tragedy and joy, and especially her great good humor.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the illustrations that are in the book. I think the readers would really like to know about that.
Oh, I'd love to tell you about the illustrations, her work, and photographs of her. Well, there are 24 Torchy color comic strips from the early 1950s, and the color is so vibrant. Apparently, back then, they could use ink that was stronger in color than we might see today
Oh, interesting.
In our Sunday papers. Yeah. And then we have a portfolio of 88 single-panel Patty Joe and Gingers, and those are from the mid-40s and 50s. Well, obviously, this is our biggest section, because we thought these would be the most surprising for our readers. Here's our outspoken little Patty Joe declaiming on all sorts of topics, and they are so topical. They describe everyday news. So I've annotated each one, and I put a little paragraph there next to it explaining it and putting it in historical context so the reader can learn what Orms is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and some of these Patty Joe and Gingers are from original drawings. And on these originals, you can see some of her erasures and her whiteouts, and you can almost feel Jackie Orms' own hand. And the captions on these are written in her hand before they were typeset. And then backing up, let's see, in time, we have a selection of the 1937 Torchies. And these are her earliest, and they're drawn with a very delicate, fine black line. And coming up from there in time, we've got candy cartoons from the World War II era, and these are bolder. You can see her evolution of her art. Now Orms is using these very strong black lines that almost look like they're carved into the page. So recovery of these cartoons for cartoon historians is very exciting. These are very rare and hard to find. And for the rest of us, they're just great to look at and to read. Most of them haven't been seen in over 50 years, and here they are now. They're documented and taking their place as part of our comics heritage. So I have to compliment the University of Michigan Press and the production staff who really threw themselves into this project. Once they got to know Jackie Orms and her work, I could just sense it that everybody was becoming so enthused, and they took a great deal of care with this artwork as well as the many photographs.
Mm-hmm.
We have photos of Jackie as a youngster and then as a socialite in an evening gown, and she's posing with celebrities. And then there's a really cute one of Jackie posing herself as a pinup.
Okay. So, Nancy, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or wanted to give you some more information if they knew something or wanted to find a place for more information, where could you give us an idea where they might go
yeah.
for that?
Yeah, thanks, Joe, for mentioning that. I'd love to hear from anybody who might have known Jackie Orms or read her comics back then or could add any information to her story. And my email address is nancy@JackieOrms.com. And then if people want to see examples of illustrations from the book on my website, that's www.JackieOrms.com. And then the press has also put up on the University of Michigan Press website more information about Jackie Orms and some examples of her cartoons and comics.
Okay, great. Well, Nancy Goldstein, thanks so much for talking to us about this amazing Jackie Orms and about the book that you wrote about her.
Oh, thanks so much, Joe.
Okay, take
care. My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
We've been talking to Nancy Goldstein, author of Jackie Orms, the first African-American woman cartoonist, published by the University of Michigan Press. If you'd like to learn more about our other books, please visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, copyright 2008, all rights reserved.